We're going to be recording the meeting, so be aware that you don't carry the privileges of MPs. And we'll start with an introduction. We haven't got any new members or anything, no. Before we even begin, can I introduce Charlotte, who's going to give us a presentation? And Charlotte is, go on, VEP manager.
Visitor Economy Partnership Manager.
At the county. So welcome, very welcome. Thanks so much for coming, because I think this is a really, really important issue that we're dealing with. And we'll go straight to the minutes. Can we approve the minutes? No dissent? Yeah, I've got... Thank you. Those are approved. Apologies.
Councillor Powell is away.
Councillor Powell, apology.
Not got his substitute here.
Okay, that's fine. Public question time, nil. Councillor session, nil. Members' items, nil. And called in items, nil. And if it's okay with members, what I'd like to do is to take Charlotte's item first so that she can get away. Which means we'll turn immediately to item 8A, Business and Leisure Tourism Presentation.
Okay.
Do you want to make an introduction at all to it, or should we let her launch straight forth?
I think we'll let Charlotte,
Charlotte. Presentation. Thanks, Charlotte, very
I'm
much.
I'm going to stand up if that's okay.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more comfortable. Firstly, thank you very much for inviting me to the scrutiny meeting. I have a pleasure of working with Dean and Michelle and the team on the County Town's offer, but also the wider Stafford Borough offer, which I must say is beautiful. I don't actually live in Staffordshire, I commute every day and I commute through Stafford and you know, Trenton Gardens, Wedgwood, the County Town, and the unique individual traders that you do have in Stafford and the train links. I must say it's what my home county, my kind of trade its own left arm to have. So you are very blessed. I just wanted to set the scene really in terms of tourism and the economy. I think I've been in visitor economy now for about 6-7 years and I've been put in the back of library services, I've been put with arts and culture. Sometimes it's not exactly fit the mould. And I think we haven't seen the breakdown of the visitor economy since the pandemic. In fact, we've never seen the breakdown of the visitor economy in my generation or other people's generation, kind of post-war, up until COVID. And it actually did my industry and my offices a favour in the fact that when you see something kind of break and fall down that never has before, it's taken very seriously. And that's where Visit England have stepped in recently and central government has stepped in. They've aligned 13 ministerial departments behind the visitor economy and said, actually, it's about enjoyment and employment. And without the visitor economy in the UK, which was once pre-pandemic and still is the fastest growing industry in the UK, we don't have a fantastic offer, not just for Staffordshire, but for the whole of the country. We don't have that international travel. We don't have that domestic travel. But what was also apparent during COVID is that our local residents are our lifeblood. So when the chips are down, local people can help to sustain our visitor economy. So in terms of tourism, it's usually worth £127 billion a year. And in terms of the UK, it's the third largest service export sector. But people don't think of tourism as exports because people come in, get their ticket, go through the door. But if you think of organisations like Nelson's Gin, Titanic Brewery, they actually export or want to export. And the same with packaged holidays, they are actually an export industry. So not only is it about domestic services and consumers, it has potential in terms of its growth. In terms of the West Midlands though, out of all of that kind of potential, that inward investment, the West Midlands actually, in terms of inbound and domestic overnight visitors, doesn't get a huge slice of the pie compared to other locations. And I'd argue that Staffordshire isn't getting the biggest part of that pie that it can at the moment. And Staffordshire, we got around the table, myself and the operational operators in the 10 local authorities, including Stoke-on-Trent. And we've all come together, and so actually, Staffordshire as a whole is the UK's biggest and best playground. It has huge potential. I've mentioned some of the attractions and the offering in Stafford, but actually if you package that with neighbouring boroughs and districts, but also neighbouring destinations like Cheshire, Derbyshire, Shropshire, Leicestershire, we have a phenomenal offer that can bring in more visitors to stay longer, spend more, and hopefully return again. But also, what we don't want is our residents leaving and kind of spending their money out of area if what we can do is retain that spend to support our local economy. So, you know, we have national prize treasures, outstanding outdoors, with a birthplace of the circus, we're the world capital of ceramics. We are not short in this county for visitor product, but maybe we've not been shouting about it as much as what we can. So, as I say, nationally, Chipswell, we've had to reboot the industry from a ground up, and we've not done that alone. It's not just been the County Council acting alone. It's been Visit England who have helped to push forward a national review, a review of destination management organisations. And in the past, destination management organisations such as Enjoy Staffordshire has very much focused on marketing, and that's taken us so far. But what Visit England are trying to do is say, actually, these new local visitor economy partnerships will replace destination management organisations, and they will basically help with place development, and they will be at the heart of place and economic development strategies. They will look at things like education, they'll look at things like transport, they'll look at things like open spaces, sustainability, accessibility, because all of those things actually do contribute and do support visitor economy, as does the visitor economy. So for instance, we have attractions supporting charities, we have attractions offering free and respite services to people who have a blue light card, who are foster carers. So the visitor economy that is in Staffordshire can also help to support and safeguard and work in partnership with statutory services too. So local visitor economy partnerships, there will be about 40 across the country. We've had to jump several hoops to gain accreditation to be around the table with Visit England and central government, and we've got that accreditation. But they will be strong leadership and governance structures that will help to sustainably grow the local visitor economy. They'll drive place shaping agendas. They will create value-added jobs, bring in new talent, and stimulate innovation. Visit England is creating a portfolio of nationally supported, strategic, and high-performing LVAPs, implementing destination development partnership pilots in the North East and West Midlands. So above these 40 local visitor economy partnerships that we've all had to gain accreditation for, there's these destination development partnerships. And in the North East, they've got one, and that came with a price tag, well, a given price from central government of £2.4 million. And that was to grow the visitor economy, but also to help create jobs in the creative sector. So while there isn't a huge amount of money going for visitor economy, in working in partnership with other local visitor economy partnerships across the country, we're able to draw down funding opportunities, marketing opportunities, give content to Visit England, and we can pick and choose what that will look like, but also give Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent a voice around that national table. So what does it mean? National strategic engagement, a clear strategic link for the region, from a local to a national level. Access via the LVEP to national initiatives, so training and development for not just my team at the county, but your team as well. There's training being offered by Visit England. There's also a huge amount of data that they hold and they're investing in at a sub-regional level that they're going to start filtering down to LVEPs to help influence place planning at a local level. They will be giving us help and support for our destination to become more sustainable and accessible. We know that accessibility groups stay longer in the destination, will take their time to visit a destination, and will spend more in the destination. And at the moment, I'm not sure that we fare particularly well in terms of our accessibility to the visitor, and yet it's a huge growing market. and there will be opportunities to collaborate and learn from other destinations via their business support programmes as well. That's a national context, and that's not my presentation, so you know that's the voice of Visit England coming through. But all I would say, to sum it up, is we have a huge potential here to connect the whole of Staffordshire and to make sure that our county town and the products in Stafford really thrive and come forward in that. In terms of our local visitor economy partnership and our structure, it's a partnership collaboration mainly between officers at Enjoy Staffordshire and Visit Stoke, but also with the other 8 local authorities around the county. And the role very much is for Enjoy Staffordshire to lead on national and regional marketing campaigns, Visit Stoke to do the same for Stoke. But we will be packaging up all of the offer across the county. But what we need is for these boroughs and districts to also help us to retain that spend and be sending the same messages out to residents and their local audience. In terms of the structure, we're going to be having an LVET board recognised by central government. It's a mandate, in fact, to deliver. I am told that if there is a general election and politics change, it will still continue. This is a long-term programme. It will link into We Are Staffordshire, and I would encourage anybody who engages with the LVET to also engage in We Are Staffordshire, because We Are Staffordshire is an organisation that connects lots of different business sectors together. So the tourism and hospitality sector can kind of benefit from that in terms of the supply chain opportunities there. But there will also be a local authority stakeholder group, which Michelle and Martine actually attend. And that's the local authority officers who help to inform and shape the local visitor economy partnership board and to say, this is the content that we would like to see from Stafford. These are the star operators that we want on the star operators advisory panel, which will connect into the LVET board. And these are the task and finish groups that we'd like to see. What I can tell you is that accommodation will be a priority for this county, not just for Stafford Borough, but for the whole county. What we need to do on recruiting that board, which we're in the process of doing, and by the way, I have had great interest from Stafford Attractions, is to create a growth plan, and that growth plan is recognised by central government. And when they've got all of those growth plans together, they will be able to go, okay, there's a commonality here between Staffordshire and Shropshire, or Staffordshire and Derbyshire, and therefore we need to support this project or this programme. So this very long shopping list in terms of visitor economy could be around accommodation, it could be around lobbying, local planning. We've got Aston Marina planning application coming up, I believe. It could be around high streets. This the list for visitor economy could go as far along as we want youth opportunity funded places at our museums, but we won't be able to deliver it all. What we're going to have to do is basically consult and drill that down. But what I can tell you, we will be delivering, because we promised it in our visitor economy action plan, which we launched last year, is a large-scale county-wide accommodation study and acceleration activation plan. Sounds very grand. We've already done a feasibility study in Stafford that mentions that there is potential for hotel development. And that's on the back of a large-scale accommodation review that we did in 2019 that we've retested to say that we don't have enough accommodation in the county, nor do we have enough accommodation around our county town. We have the train lines, we have students on our doorstep, and it's not just talking about visitors who get off the train with a backpack. I think everyone thinks of visitor economy as someone, got a backpack, come from London, but actually it could be a relative visiting a resident, and a resident who, might only have 2 bedrooms and need to put them up. And the data actually shows that. Steam data. So every year now, we're going out in January and we're talking to operators, we're talking to accommodation providers, and they're providing their monthly data. And that gives us something called the Scarborough Tourism Economic Assessment Model, which is a national standard of data collection for this sector, which we haven't done before in this county. And I can go into findings of that in a moment. But we are having a lot of engagement, not just from know, your Alton Towers, but your Trentons and your Wedgwoods and your individual traders as well, to give us that data, which is fantastic. We're going to be rebooting the Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent Convention Bureau. A couple of years ago, that industry had flopped and it had to rebuild, and hotel investors were thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure if we invest, because what's the convention market like, you know, conferencing and events. It's back on its feet, and you know, the history centre that you're getting in Stafford gives you an additional offering. In the feasibility study that we did for Stafford, we spoke about hotels, but we also spoke about maybe multi-purpose use space, which could be handy not just for local employers to use, but also people looking for kind of unique venue space that could be bespoke to their needs. Sustainable tourism action plan. One thing that we know is if you run a sustainable tourism business, certainly in terms of accommodation, the likes of booking.com give you a little green leaf, you might have seen it when you book. And it's quite easy to get if you kind of go through a sustainability assessment. But that green leaf shows quality, and it also creates more bookings. We know we have evidence that that is how it goes. So we want to encourage our businesses to get that seal of approval. But we also want to look at things like our transport strategy, which is difficult being a rural county. But we'll be looking at a sustainable tourism action plan to increase the quality and also to attract in more events and hotels to be able to secure those events. Awards, you might have heard of some small event called the Tourism and Hospitality Awards, which my team runs. It's actually now the largest competition of its kind in the country, which is testament to the product that we have in Staffordshire. Again, some destinations would chop their left arm off to have this product. And I think coming into the destination as a visitor every day, maybe I see it, whereas maybe a local might not and take that for granted. But we do have a representation from every borough and district entering that award. It's happening on the 14th of March this year, and we are a destination who bagged three national awards, actually, Trentham Gardens being one of them last year. We have actually secured more awards this year than other West Midlands destinations. So people are looking at Staffordshire, and they're also looking at other products in Staffordshire and the county town of Stafford. Business support, we will be looking at skills. We have a bit of a skills crisis in this industry around chefing and other skills, but also a perception of skills in this industry. People think tourism and hospitality is about bed making sometimes and pouring tea and things like that. And while it is, and those people do an amazing job to, you know, be at the coalface, there are actually some other skills involved, like engineering of roller coasters, landscape architecture. So actually it employs about 80% of all people. Many people around this room may have started your careers in tourism and hospitality. Be that at university or your first job. So it's a springboard into other industries. And a marketing strategy. So not just a marketing strategy that is just, we want to do this marketing campaign because it looks good, but actually drilling down on specific market segments which are data driven. So we know in this county we're going to get couples, cultural families, so those families who say you can go to Alton Towers, but we also want you to do something cultural and educational, a little bit like me and my children actually. But then also the fuss-free traveller who uses a train, who comes from London, you know, with their girlfriend or boyfriend, and accesses this type of thing. So we have three target markets which are not just based on, as I say, anything. They're based on Visit England market segments which are data driven. So we will be doing this. We know that will feature in the growth plan, but what else? So the marketing strategy is out. Country-loving traditionalists, aspirational family phone, and free and easy mini breakers. Now this is a county-wide strategy, but what we're trying to do is work individually with borough districts to say, out of those three target markets, where should we be casting the net for your specific area? And it might be that, for some of the boroughs and districts, it doesn't make sense to work with another borough and district in Staffordshire because it's on the border. So it might be that Stoke look at working with the Moorlands and Derbyshire, or the Moorlands and Cheshire, and likewise. So we don't necessarily have to package up itinerary as a marketing activity with the usual suspects. We can be quite creative as to how we draw people in. I mean, I travel in from Shropshire, as I say, you've got a huge market ready and waiting there to come to Stafford. And I know that many are filling the car park at Trentham and will continue to do so, but where else can we push them to in Stafford? So steam data, Scarborough Tourism and Economic Activities, because it started in Scarborough. It shows us how many visitors we attract each year and how much they are worth to the local economy. What goes into it? Hotel market data, attraction footfall, meeting and conferences, third party data, visitor surveys, accommodation stock audits, festivals and events. So there's quite a lot to capture. And unfortunately, for my team, it's not a data programme that we can just print off. This takes manual collection every year. For accommodation, it is a little bit easier because we can access accommodation data via the West Midlands Growth Company. And what we can see is in 2022, we have 37% of serviced accommodation versus 63% of non-serviced accommodation. Serviced accommodation is like a hotel where you have that service on tap. Non-serviced accommodation are things like Airbnbs or guest houses or self-catering. So we know how much stock we've got. We know what the occupancy is. It's 79%, and actually that's better than previous years. We know what the average room rate is, and yes, it's growing, and that's really positive. We need that price to go up, and we need the occupancy to go up, so that when we're talking to investors, we can say, you know, it's worth your money coming to Staffordshire. We know that we've got under construction and final planning for certain schemes and a pipeline. I would argue that there's not enough in the pipeline coming forward. And I'd argue that because I have spoken to some of our hoteliers in and around Stafford Borough, and they are saying to me that actually midweek, some of them are very well booked, or some of them at weekends are booked, but during the midweek they are booked, but the weekends are not necessarily booked. So there's opportunities to package them better with the attractions around in the area. So we know that we've got planning in these areas. Whether or not some of them will come forward or not, we're kind of waiting to see. And visitor volume, this is how we're capturing it. So all of the attractions, shopping centres, retail parks, cultural and sporting events and festivals, visitor information centres, car parks, countryside teams are being asked across the county to complete this. That's how we capture it, and we also go out and speak to them individually. Staffordshire visitor numbers, 90% are day visitors, 10% of our overnight market is overnight. But 5%, interestingly, are staying with friends and relatives. And we are seeing slight growth, but not enough. And we can see how that looks in terms of the seasons. So we do quite well in August, in the summer. We do quite well in Easter. So we know as well that our campaigns are indicating that those, you know, are really good times of the year for Staffordshire. You know, it's quite a seasonal destination. So what about outside of season? And that's where our marketing needs to improve out of season to bring more people here or to retain the spend here. And in terms of how it's split, we look at Staffordshire, the Black Country and West Midlands area. Of course, West Midlands have the bullring and things, so shopping is going to outweigh their figures. But in terms of Staffordshire, food and drink is a real big sell. And if we look at the Beautiful Borough campaign and what Martine has been trying to achieve is the rurality of Stafford as a borough district, there is an opportunity to look at food and drink in this borough in particular and package that with the already amazing attractions that we have. And I would say that Trentham has been quite successful in doing that recently. They put on kind of market stalls and food establishments in the middle of their in their normal tenants. And accommodation, it says 11%, they've rounded it up here, but again, it's just not where it probably needs to be. However, it is bucking the trend for for the West Midlands, that my first slide, you know, I would say the West Midlands as a whole struggles with accommodation. We know that Birmingham is up to capacity in the summer. So again, there's an opportunity to work with Birmingham and, you know, those on the train line of Stafford to build the case that accommodation is needed. So the county performance shows, actually, it's really good here because we're comparing 21 to 22, it shows that in 2022 we were up 28.7%. But actually, when we compare ourselves to 2019, which was pre-pandemic, which was when we were kind of like at our baseline, our performance shows that the county's visitor economy has grown by 15.6%. What does that mean for Stafford? We collect your figures the same. Actually, Stafford's figures are showing that you're up 18.5% on 2021, which I would expect. We're seeing growth. But if we look at 2019, actually it's minus 0.1% in terms of visitor days and 0.16, minus 0.16 on visitor numbers. So while we are seeing growth, and it's really healthy growth for Stafford Borough, you're just teetering on recovery, I would say. You've recovered, but now we need to grow. And I think that's what the message I say today. Stafford Borough's approach to visitor economy needs to be focused now on growth. You have recovered. You're just almost past recovery. It's now to put the foot down on the gas. Hotel visitor accommodation acceleration plan, I've mentioned. The priority is to attract more visitors to stay longer, spend more, and enhance the growth of the visitor economy. Improving the quality and range of visitor accommodation will play a significant role in achieving this. Seeking guidance from the planning teams to help inform and shape project scopes and deliverability. I think what we see sometimes is our attractions putting in planning applications before consulting with the planning teams. And I'd really like the LVEP to be the bridge between working with our star operators and working with the LVEP board to really understand that planning process. So, you know, our attractions have that guidance and that hand that's held through that planning process to make sure that it stacks up. So we've got the hotel and visitor economy study, which gives us a robust analysis of current provision. But we need to look at the local plans as well, and the sustainable local tourism activation plan. Look at seasonality, consult with accommodation providers in the area, and then also start that dialogue with the planning authorities. And in Staffordshire, we have 8 of those. So, and you all have different local plans, so that's going to take a little bit of time to do. But this project will run summer 24 to summer 25. We want to ensure the planning teams are integral to the design and delivery of this project. Undertake a 3-stage study, with particular focus on Staffordshire Moorlands in the first instance. I say that because they're funding this project via their UK Shared Prosperity funding. And what we will be doing with them is creating a blueprint that looks at prime spots for growth opportunity, highlighting barriers to growth, recommending actions to be taken, and identifying any business support requirements. So in Staffordshire Moorlands, it might be about hotels, but it might also be about Airbnbs, or actually it might be about, you know, you do have accommodation, but is that accommodation accessible or sustainable? So the blueprint will look very different in, the model will look slightly different in the Moorlands to what it may look like in, say, Tamworth Centre. But ultimately, the methodology that will be used to support new accommodation in the county will be the same. But we will have to work with those planning teams. So, are there any questions? The LVEP, just to summarise, is going to be at the heart of place shaping. It's not just going to focus in on marketing. It's going to be looking at product development. It's going to be recognised by central government, and I would really like to take some questions from the floor, if that's okay, or maybe pick them up at a later date, whichever works for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Charlotte. That's very comprehensive. Our job now is going to be to drill the whole lot down to Stafford Borough and what we can do. Yeah. So, questions for Charlotte?
Through you, Chair. Can we have a copy of the marketing strategy?
Yes.
Yes, if you send it to Jackie, is that the answer? And you could distribute it to everybody. Thank you very much, Charlotte. That's great. Anyone else got any questions? I mean, the question that's always arisen in Staffordshire has been, why do people not stay? Our day visitor turnout has always been excellent, but getting people to stay and spend their money over a period of days or weeks has been extraordinarily difficult, and it'll be interesting to see if you make any inroads into that.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of staying for weeks, I don't think that's maybe where we need to be aiming, but certainly 2 days, because I didn't go into the data as much as maybe I could on a one-to-one level, but where they are staying overnight, it's on average 1.7. So, you know, we can nudge that behaviour to 2 days. It's how we package things appropriately. And I think, yes, we can target places like Shropshire or Derbyshire, but maybe actually we need to be targeting a little bit further afield now, so that when people travel, it makes sense for them to stay rather than get in the car and just, oh, it's only an hour. So we are looking to extend the marketing further afield, which is good, but unfortunately, you know, councillors and officers don't necessarily see that marketing because, you know, we're not marketing in the centre of Stafford Borough, so you think, oh, well, what is the visitor economy team doing? Which is why I'd really encourage a relationship, and it is about partnership, whereby my officers work with people like Michelle and Dean and look at, okay, what is the narrative for Stafford? What are the itineraries that need to be built, and how do we, you know, capitalise on that to retain spend? Because my team at the moment really are focusing about making sure that all the product across the county is being put into what Visit England and Visit Britain are doing. But I do think there is an opportunity to look at honing in on the county town and the beautiful borough a little bit more.
Answer? Response?
I don't disagree at all.
It's a matter of finance and priorities.
Yeah.
It's just that this is such an important industry to the borough. I don't think we really appreciate how important the visitor economy is to Stafford Borough and has been for a long time. For a very long time, we didn't actually recognise it at all, because the tourism and visitor economy work that was done in this borough was sat in the department, the leisure department, that dealt with football pitches. And it's been a big journey to get it actually onto the forefront of understanding how important it is to the borough. I mean, if you take Stafford Showground, for instance, we talk about trying to encourage people to come and stay. Stafford Showground is full all the year, and it's mostly full of exhibitors. And those exhibitors all stay, and as a result, there's a bed and breakfast industry that's grown up around Weston, Hopton, and the villages in my ward that accommodate. They're full all the time, not from visitors, but from the show operators who need somewhere to sleep while they're here, and that's usually for 4 nights. My big question to Dean has been, where do we take this from now on? Because it is... something particularly for this committee, I think it's something that we need to keep looking at. We need to encourage Alex to make sure that it's top of the agenda in the local plan whenever that comes into being, and so forth.
I know we've got friends from down south, and they stay locally, Bush Crofts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a really good one for the NEC, or whatever they call it these days. We could market Stafford for, because they go down on the train, because it's so much easier, because we, you know, it's one stop to the international, really. So that, again, it's about building up that and getting that knowledge, that ground knowledge, and getting that out there for people.
I think just jump in there for a moment. There is a massive opportunity, in actual fact, for Stafford, and there always has been, because we could become another Stratford-on-Avon type touch. We live by a canal. The canal is not joined to Stafford, but the number of boats that pass that this town every year, each boat in the narrow boat scenario can have anything up to 8 people on. And if those thousands of boats that go past us every year were able to divert into Stafford, we could really take that on board and really exploit it. We have a castle, we have all sorts of things which would appeal to people and get them into our shops and putting money into our town through that way. It's a big jump, I realise that. It's a hard jump to take to some degree. But it's an essential one which will give this town such a kickback for years to come with the flow of traffic coming in each and every year, guaranteed. It's an opportunity.
And we need to remember that Stone is our canal town. Not forgetting Stone. I'll take Ant next.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the hotel accommodations part of your research. I think we've got a lot of potential with our transport links within the bar, across the bar, Stone and Stafford especially. But also on that transport thing, I noticed on one of the slides you had a fair amount of visitor economy was based on transport as a destination. I wondered if you could give us a little bit more detail about what that means. And have you thought about cycling as part of that? We've got a very flat county through the Trent Valley. Got canals, but not all of them are suitable for cycling. Is there any sort of work on county-wide, middle-distance cycling? We've got back lanes that are somewhat safe, but are not signposted as safe. Anything around transport and therefore that could build into the hotel accommodation and that sector? A lot in there, sorry.
No. In terms of transport, you will have noticed that there's been an announcement recently about the transport funding that the county is getting. My team has been asked to join the strategic transport planning team to make sure that the LVEP is feeding into that. And when I mentioned the Sustainable Tourism Action Plan, transport is a main focus of that. So in terms of sustainable travel, cycling, absolutely, those are the things that my team have been mentioning to the transport team who are building this new transport strategy for the county. And interestingly, we are talking to the Levelling Up funding team, the central government, about how do we connect up some of the Levelling Up funded projects to our main transport hubs. And I know that the train stations are also looking at how do you know we make them more accessible, what lift provision is there, because you know if you're a disabled traveller coming from London or Scotland here, what does that look like? So there's lots of different strands when we're talking about transport, but it you know it does tie into that Sustainable Tourism Action Plan we're working on.
So transport is more than just steam trains and canal boats.
Yes.
It's connecting places together.
I mean, naively, when I did come here to work, I was like, we could do more with the canals, and we absolutely can in terms of cycling.
Sure, yeah.
But to get from one place to another in a canal boat, it actually takes, you know, I didn't know that they move about 4 miles per hour.
Yes.
So that was quite funny. But yeah, absolutely, there's more that we can do with the canals, and I think that there's a partnership to be had with the Canals and River Trust. And some of those partners and getting them onto the LVEP board potentially, or working with our star operators on Task and Finish. Interestingly, you mentioned pets. Over the pandemic, who didn't get a dog, who didn't get a pet? And I think, yes, you've got pets at home, and oh, how does that link into visitor colony? Actually, when you package up some of these things and you look at the success of Trentham, which is, you know, everyone with a dog goes to Trentham, imagine if we could make Stafford, you know, the pet-friendly destination. And I think that it's about trying to pull out those USPs. I mean, my team do laugh at me because I mentioned the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, but actually, you know, getting some of these quirky links packaged could be quite good for Stafford.
Yeah. Brian?
Yeah, following up on what Peter said, there is a volunteer group in Stafford trying to do the link or reinstate the link from the canal into the centre of town. I know they're progressing well in building the basin in the old location, but of course it will then got to do, the Environment Agency aren't giving them the support to put it back up the river like it was in the 20s, 30s. They're sending them down the culvert, I think it is. But it's a hell of a project, and as Peter says, if that comes to fruition, it's really going to open up the town. You'd obviously have to build a basin somewhere, probably next to, opposite Asda at the end of the football field there would be ideal, but it is something for the future, but well worth supporting.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, what you need to do to encourage people to stay overnight, because I was just trying to think, what in Stafford or what makes me want to stay overnight in various places?
I think for people to want to stay overnight, it's about packaging up some of these things. So you do this on the one day, then you'd kind of stay overnight and do this on the next day. It's a bit like Amazon. If you like this, then you'll like that approach to marketing. And we know that that works. But also events, you know, when Trentham does have its events, not just Trentham, but, you know, light switch-ons and things like that. Getting in there early and offering that consumer an option, you can stay overnight.
So I was thinking about eating out or whatever in the evening, whether, I don't know, whether we offer very good sort of opportunities to do that or what you need to do. You know, I mean, you can come for the day and then in the evening you think, oh, I want to do something else and then go somewhere else the next day.
Yeah, the nighttime economy and how that's packaged. You know, there's loads of businesses around Stafford, and all of those businesses will have things like Christmas parties and you know, socialisation opportunities. So could we be saying, if you're planning your Christmas night out, stay here, do this the next day, team building. There's lots of different things to go at, but it does come down to capacity as well. So if we're promoting you can stay overnight, but then there's no bed space, that's chicken and an egg. So I think when Francis is on about, actually, do we stimulate demand by looking at accommodation, I would say yes.
It's a starting point.
It's a starting point, but it's not, you're not alone on that. That is a county-wide concern. And we know that locations such as Cheshire have been successful in increasing GVA by increasing its accommodation.
Yeah. Thank you. Money.
We had a huge visitor economy because of the Iron Man. I'm just wondering what you guys are doing to try and attract and retain events such as that.
Yeah, that was a shame, wasn't it? And I think that, you know, events, if their business model doesn't stack up as well, that's a difficult one really for the LVEP to try and retain. In terms of events, we've mentioned the Convention Bureau reboot. What we don't want to see is...
Can you just explain what the Convention...
Yes. Bureau...
Whatever it is.
So a Convention Bureau is basically the business tourism function of the LVEP. So it's about filling hotels and convention space with events. But also what we haven't done in the past is look at our blue and green space, so, you know, our open fields, our lakes and things like that. So working with Stoke-on-Trent City Council, we will be employing a Convention Bureau post, which will specifically look at events and attracting in events. In terms of international events and larger scale events, we have a lot of packaging to do, and also overnight stays. To accommodate those that size and scale of event, but we are working with Visit England on that, so that we can package up Staffordshire as a better place to host events, because it's difficult. Sometimes event organisers may come and then feel a bit disappointed if we don't have the bed space, so it's what type of events can we get in, and doing that homework so that we know that the proposition stacks up, so that that event will be successful. But yes, we are working on that. We're employing a post to hone in on that.
Thanks very much.
Going back really to what Hannah was saying about transport and everything. I mean, we know that, say you were on a narrow boat and you parked at the bottom of Rochford Bank, you can get a bus into town, and it's about linking so that people know that if they're coming on a narrow boat or they're camping out at so and so, they can get a, they don't have to come in on the car, they can
they can either walk, because this is the easy way to walk, or this is the bus you can get on, which number bus, this is how often, which is not always brilliant. But even somewhere as far out, because it's a different canal structure, at Knowsall, there is a really good bus service out to Knowsall. It's the Telford bus, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so you can stay at Knowsall, which helps build up Knowsall, because there's lots of nice pubs. But actually, you can also get the bus into town and actually stay in town quite late and have a meal somewhere else and go back to your narrowboat, because there is a good transport. So that sort of thing, it's about linking that. Is that what you're also doing?
Yes, yeah. So again, in that sustainable tourism action plan, that is an action. And we are having a new website. The Enjoy Staffordshire website is having an overhaul in the summer. And we're hoping that the transport information will come through a lot stronger on that. I think some of it is we've got the product and it's getting the basics right, and actually, you know, making sure that information is available and then going, okay, we've got all that and where are the gaps. But at the moment, we are heavily reliant on the partnership bringing that information together. And to do that for a whole county is quite a bit of work. Enjoyable though.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. Can I turn to you, Dean, and ask you where we might take this as a scrutiny committee, because we have had a wonderful umbrella picture of what's happening nationally and across the county. What has been interesting next is to actually see what we are doing or proposing to do in Stafford, it's Stafford Borough, and actually what's available, the detail of the B&Bs, the hotels and so on, and what the potential is for hotels and so on. Is that a piece of work that, I'm looking at Michelle while I speak to Dean, is that a piece of work that we could sort of look at in 6 months' time? Or it's going to tie in with the local plan at some stage, presumably.
Yeah, I think what I wanted to say really, Jo, is that we've heard obviously from Charlotte around the absolute sterling work that Charlotte and the team do, and working with the team here. I think the word partnership was mentioned because it is very much about partnership. We, looking at Michelle and looking at me, we don't have a lot of resource around this area. We're a borough council. And where the local visitor economy partnership will have value is bringing all of those different parties together to have that really kind of strategic joined up approach. So I think it's not so much about what we can do, but it's what we can do together. We have got a fantastic product, as Charlotte puts it, within the borough and within the county, and it's about joining all of that up. Whether that is about promoting our towns, our canals, our attractions, we have got opportunities we need to look at, and I'm sure there's more we can do, and we will need to work with Alex and the team through the local plan and look how we do align those policies going forward. But it is a partnership, it is about joining those opportunities up. And I think my overriding comment is that tourism stroke visit economy for many, many years has not benefited from the investment nationally. It hasn't had that profile and presence. We talk about tourism, we promote it, but actually it's only until recently we've had this opportunity through the LVEP to really kind of position the county and have a single conversation with government. And I think what we want to see going forward is not just a conversation and dialogue, but investment and obviously funding to flow into the county, whether that's through the LVEP or any devolution deal in the future or future funding opportunities. So we need the visitor economy, we need tourism to have that higher profile than it has up to now. I think by working in partnership, working with Charlotte and the team, working as a group of districts and boroughs, we can really position the county effectively. And I think for this committee, then, it is coming back and seeing where we are on that journey in 6 months or 9 months' time. Charlotte and the team are doing a lot of work at the moment to get all the governance set up, to get people on the board, to get all of those sort of strategies and plans in place. And we will feed into that and make sure that Stafford as a borough is represented and those opportunities are articulated. But I think it's about coming back and seeing where we are on that journey. And I think It's going to be a journey, isn't it, over the next couple of years to take it from what has effectively been a DMP, Destination Management Partnership, to something a bit different.
Yeah.
And what I want to see going forward is that profile given to tourism and the visitor economy as a thing. You know, we've seen profile given to other sectors and other parts of what we do. So I think, Chair, we can bring something back in 6 to 9 months. We can talk about where we are on that journey. But, you know, clearly this is a big opportunity through the partnership, and for us, we will play our part.
Thank you.
Chair, just to add to that, what I would say is the other boroughs and districts are looking at their own individual action plans. It's not War and Peace, but it's logical steps that each borough and district can take to prioritise certain things. So I'm happy to commit today to work with Dean and Michelle, because you know they are a small team compared to others across the county, to look at both Stafford and Cannock's visitor economy action plan, and that will feed into the same priorities as we've discussed, which are for the county, but specifically for this borough and district.
That's helpful. Have we got an action plan?
No, and I think we'll take that off because
that's section number one we're looking for, Jackie. It's that we see the beginnings of a local LV action plan.
Because I mean,
Lead
there's
back.
Lots of amazing ideas just around this table
there
alone.
Are.
But I think to have an action plan that we can go, you know, with the resource that we've got and the budget that we've got, we can achieve X, Y, and Z. And you've got to start somewhere, and we can't not afford to do that in this brilliant borough.
Can I turn to Cabinet Member before we close this down and say, is the Cabinet happy to take on board all of these thoughts and ideas, because it is such an important industry to this borough?
Yes, I've actually been to the LVEP meeting that was fairly recent, and I can totally take on board the action plan that we've got for the county. Really interested, like I say, at the accommodation side of it, especially for our presence on the M6 on the West Coast Mainline. I think we are prime position with that accommodation side of things to help the rest of the county, and the connections through. I've certainly taken on the action plan and helping us and Cannock have an integrated plan together. I think it would be really brilliant.
Would people be happy that we put a provisional date to bring this back? Realistically, I suspect it's 9 months, isn't it, Michelle?
I think so, yeah.
So it's whatever meeting falls in 9 months' time, Jackie. Is there anything else anybody wants to say on this before we let Charlotte go? Nope. Oh, Dee, yes.
Yeah, sorry, so thank you, Chair. Just sort of thinking, obviously, I know workloads, etc. Would it be feasible for this committee to ask, say, for a project lead or something for, say, 9 months or something? Go back to the Cabinet and ask for funding for so that they can link specifically between.
We'll minute that and look at the, and then you can look at the Cabinet member.
I'd be interested to see the officers put forward a plan on how that might work, but we'd also need to look at what the return to the economy would be of having someone dedicated to this.
I think it's understanding what we've got. I mean, actually, simple things we can do is like looking at the business rates and how much they're bringing into the borough as opposed to business rates for whatever else.
We've got some overworked officers. The town centre's going to take a lot of attention. I don't want the rest of the borough's tourist economy to suffer from that. So I'd be interested to see what the officers might suggest to the Cabinet.
Well, thank you, Chair. We'll come back to the Cabinet with that, resources, it's finite, and as the Cabinet members outlined, you know, we've got some significant programmes to deliver.
Exactly.
We can't be one person or two people, so I think that suggestion is noted. We'll take that away and have a look at it.
So we might need you back again.
Okay.
Very
anytime,
likely.
Anytime.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. We're very appreciative, and we'll let you go.
Just to say thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
And we're going to go back to the update. Dee, are you going to go through that? This is our pages 3 to 6, everyone.
Thank you, Chair. We've met twice. We initially set out and wanted to basically to map what was already booked for the town and then what we could build on and to see what had gone on in the past. And sort of scope what current events and what has gone on. We felt that it was really important that we also had a strategy which we want to discuss at the next task and finish group, but so that we know where we're going with our plan. So that links very much into what you've just said. So that would be really interesting. And have asked that I went along to the town centre partnership. I don't know whether we've had a response yet, but Mary Walker, who's the chair of the town centre partnership, was talking about events. So it was interesting. We wanted to sort of drill down because it's very much an overview. So asked Mary to come along and discuss with us what they are planning, because we don't want to step on their toes, but
no,
we want to work with them so they can do the hard work and we can support them doing that. And about publicity and all that sort of thing. So it's been quite an interesting group so far, but it's long term, isn't it? It's much more, you know, we need to start building ready for now to start moving forward. So we're meeting again. So.
And then you bring a report back perhaps in the autumn.
Yes.
When some events have actually been taking place.
Yeah. Able to perhaps quantify a little bit better.
Did any other members want to add anything to that? No? Thanks very much for the work you're doing anyway. It's going to be interesting to see where it takes us by next year. And where are we at? We now go back to 8B, Biodiversity Net Gain. Is that you, Alex? Actually, I know it's you because I spoke to you yesterday. Thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you. This is a report about progress on biodiversity net gain. Members may recall that a fuller presentation was provided at council back in November to set out the immediate next steps. So this is just to confirm where we're now at. Since November we've had some further information, guidance, statutory instruments and all the rest of it from central government, and on the 12th of February the biodiversity net gain of 10% started on the major applications, so that legislation is now applied to major planning applications, and on the 2nd of April it will also apply to miners, miner swamp sites. So that's where we're at. Obviously it's a live process because we're continuing to make sure that we're implementing what the government's requiring us to do. That is going well so far. So there's a coordination within the department between what's happening with planning applications and making sure the biodiversity net gain and the delivery of that in the local area can occur. So that's where we're at with that. I think it's important that we still do a monitoring and review process. So for the next 9 to 12 months to see where we are and how it's moving forward.
Thank you very much for that. Do you want to go through it page by page, just to make sure there's nothing that Alex might have missed? I think we're only looking at a couple of pages, so there's nothing on page one, nothing on page two. The question I had on 5.4 is the bit that says, if this cannot be achieved. I think the worry perhaps that we might all have is that developers will wriggle out of the obligation to put the 10% on their own development land and try and have it shove it on to somebody else. Certain organisations would probably be delighted to receive that 10% themselves, who shall be nameless, but it seems to me that the important thing is that the developers should incorporate that 10% into their developments. So how are we going to achieve that dream?
Okay, so there,
Doug's nodding his head, so I must be going somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to say something?
No, I was going to ask a similar question about on-site, off-site, and how, if there's any kind of policy approach we can take. Is this preset from central government, what the decision-making is around it? Is it case by case? Questions around a similar area.
Great, okay, thank you. So the starting point is that we've got an adopted local plan policy that sets out what the requirements are for the borough in terms of biodiversity. And the first part of paragraph 5.4 is actually saying if we can avoid even getting to the point of having to deliver biodiversity net gain, that's the best position. So we're looking at the mitigation hierarchy as the first bit to say, if you can design your development in order to protect and enhance the biodiversity, then that's really what we want. If that's not possible, and your development is going to mean that there's going to be a biodiversity loss, then that is now unacceptable. And so as that development comes forward, it needs to provide biodiversity, 10% biodiversity net gain. Ideally, that would happen on site. If it can't happen on site, then the next step is for it to occur within the same developer land ownership, but off site. And then if that's not possible, then engage with a third party in order to meet your obligations. And the last thing is then, if none of that is possible, and you can't demonstrate that any of that is possible, then the credits are available to be able to deliver. So there's quite a robust sort of hierarchy in terms of making sure that we are now doing the best that we can regarding the environment out there in 2021 to be able to meet those obligations on biodiversity.
Is that okay, Doug? And
the key thing there is 5.4 and 5.8 work together. The 5.8 points out that there are incentives to providing these off-site things as close to the development site as possible. By implication, that means disincentives for doing it far away, like other end of the county or whatever. So those two work together to say, avoid the problem. If you can't avoid the problem, solve it on-site. If you can't solve it off-site, on-site, do it nearby. If you just can't do it nearby, then you're going to have to do a lot more because your incentives fall away. So there is some controls there to try and make it so that the local area either isn't harmed or is improved.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So on the whole, we're talking about large developments here. What reasons would they be able to give that would allow them not to do it?
It's a magic thing called viability that's the killer in everything that we do in terms of developers. That's my opinion.
I think through you, Chair, I think some of the frustration with the viability is what's viable for them and what's viable to us isn't necessarily the same thing, but it amounts to...
I'll probably be struck down by the officers for my view. I'm sorry.
And viability is sometimes used for financial. There is viability here that is to do with just the practicalities of the land as well. If you can think of an urban area that has gone to seed and there's a lot of natural biodiversity within a small urban plot, it may not be possible to provide that same biodiversity on that exact same plot. So they would have to compensate somewhere else. It could be around the corner, another garden, or it could be across town. So there's a viability on practical side in addition to the implied viability on the finance side. Okay. There is a combination there, but Alex, am I off topic here?
No, well, just to provide a little bit more context to this, so there's quite a detailed metric that the central government have produced, the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. So there isn't a fixed template, if you like, to make sure that the habitat that is being created really is a net gain. And so there's an assessment that's done on the site that may or may not be lost, and then this factor is applied through the metric to make sure that that it's achieved and maintained for a 30-year period. It's not just that they can do it and then it's not monitored and it slips away. So that's where the ecological resource comes in for the council over that long period of time, but also working with other partner organisations such as Natural England and the Wildlife Trusts to all work together to make that happen.
Yeah, that's helpful, Dee.
Thank you, Chair. Will it stop what happened on the St George's site with the trees that were chopped down? What mechanism is there to stop that happening again? Because the fine was minimum, so it was worth the from what I read, I wasn't on the planning or anything at the time, so I didn't see any real detail, but what I learned was that, you know, it was worth the developers chopping those trees down and taking the hit with the fine. But that doesn't mean that the trees are still there, they've gone, you know. Does this help stop that? And if so, how does it help stop that?
Okay, so I don't know the detail of that example.
They cut down 30 trees.
But
big, mature, beautiful trees, and now it's much worse.
But the requirement of the developer is to assess the biodiversity on that particular site in all its forms as a starting point. And obviously it's important to make sure that we have a credible baseline for what that is. And so we're doing some work behind the scenes to make sure that we're using the various aerial mapping and other records to really understand what the habitat is before you start to then create the net gain. This is not about tree protection.
That's just an example.
It is about actually enhancing what's there. So there will be obviously other legislation that protects other environmental assets such as trees through tree preservation orders, mm-hmm. etc., which clearly need to be taken into account and designed in this development as they come forward. But there will never be a perfect situation where there won't be scenarios in the future where unfortunate things may occur. But it's up to us to be able to set out the ground rules and make sure that doesn't take place.
Any more? I've got one more, Alex. 5.12, the monitoring fee. It's not the fee, but how will you undertake the monitoring to make sure that biodiversity net gain is actually taking place?
So
do we need more staff, in other words?
There is going to be additional resource requirement in order to be able to monitor these management plans and what's taking place on site. And we're aware that there are a number of years that has to take place, year one, year two, year five, year 10, year 15. And the other thing to recognise is that it's on major applications and minor applications. And so as time goes on, that number of applications will steadily build over the years. So it is important to make sure that we do monitor it effectively and have the resources in place. So that's something that we will be further investigating.
And the money comes from Section 106.
The money will need to.
So we need to monitor our Section 106 obligations as well, don't we?
I think, Chair, just to say on that, it's alluded to in the report, but yes, we can charge monitoring fees, but we need to develop that as a proposal, and that will need to come forward to Cabinet. We haven't got that detail yet. We are doing some work on that at the moment. But the point that Alex has made is that no, we won't need resource from day one because this is going to build up over a period of time. It's new, it's coming to force. We're doing the work at the moment to understand what that means, put the guidance notes together, etc. We have an ecologist. We're working with Canet Chase, who have an ecologist as well. So we're putting all the technical work together. But again, over the next few months, we'll start to see what the impact of this is actually on the ground.
So we might.
I kind of call it a live experiment because this is all new and it's national. Sure. We've got to do it, it's mandatory. But it's only when these applications start coming in and they actually get assessed that we'll see what that looks like. So I think really just to say this evening that it is here for the majors, it will come on stream for the minor applications.
And we'll possibly come and have a look at it again.
Yeah.
At a future date, but we won't specify that.
No, it's
going to
look at in the future and when we've got more data. As well.
Okay, so is that...
thank you, Chair. I was just, if particularly with like a housing, for instance, I know it may be more difficult when it's businesses and everything. But if people that are buying houses on a plot that's got you know these special areas know about it, they'll look after it, won't they? It's like the end of my street. We've got a piece of grass. Belongs to the borough, but you know that you can't build on it or whatever. But we know that, so if people are trying to do something with it, they shouldn't. They'll be up in arms, and we'll let you know. And you know, you've always got one nosy neighbour, so that's one way that you can keep an eye on something. That, you know, you've got Mr. Jobsworth. That actually, but that's great in those circumstances, isn't it? You know, if somebody comes to try and cut it down, you say, actually, you can't do that. We'll ring the council. Your eyes and ears. It makes your life easier.
Excellent. Thank you for that, T. And
can I just make a point if I may? The point at which is very relevant, actually, fact to ourselves, to myself anyway, was that in the past, in fact, where I lived on, I live on Mill Road now, just like 3 more drive off Mill Road, there was a big police station, police headquarters there. And the point that I would like to make is that we should be very, very careful about is the police or anybody like that putting these massive, great big pile on the aerials up in the sky, of which we have no idea what they are actually doing. Just to give you an indication, in Cremorne Drive, it was a death in every house. It would be a pet or a person. Or we're losing dogs, animals, and this type of thing. And virtually from that, you could go through the humans that were living there as well, and they all had cancer of some, a lot of people had cancer of one form or another. When that post went down, and when the police moved out of that site, everything stopped, went back to normal again. And there was no more instances of likes of cancer and things like that. So we don't know what these great big things are that they're doing, and we'll be very careful we go along in green for these things to be put up like that. I know they need communication, but when you have a pole there and you watch it, and not one bird ever sits on that pole, not one bird ever sat on it, they were around it desperately rather than stay there. So that thing was giving out rays, which people locally, in actual fact, weren't aware of, and they were suffering from it. So I think we
glad it went down.
We be more careful when things like that go up.
Thanks, Peter. Anybody else? I'm moving on to the next item, which is the development management update. So that's John and Councillor A.A. Freed together.
Thunder was not like you stole them.
Dean, John?
Yeah. John, you've got a chair, we just need to
distribute.
I'll explain what this is now.
The chair.
just to explain, John spotted an error in one of the tables earlier. So in the report, figure 2, if you could replace figure 2 in your report with the handout effectively, because I think we spotted an error in it earlier. John spotted the error.
Okay, did everybody get that? Replace figure 2 in your report, with which is on page 13, with the sheet that John's distributed. Are you going to start off, John?
Give I'll us say a few words and then John.
Dean's going to start off, right?
And then okay, Chair. So I think we reported, I think it was back in August, where we were with development management performance. Obviously, we highlighted that there was a backlog of historic applications, and I think at the time we explained that we put some additional resource into the team. We looked at how to streamline processes and with the aim, really, of bringing the backlog down. So the report just sets out what work has taken place over the last 6 months or so to address those issues, and that work is summarised in the report at 5.1. Probably just a note overall that really good progress, I think excellent progress has been made over the last few months in bringing the backlog down. The total number of applications on hand has reduced significantly since we reported progress in August. Just to add as well, I think I did mention this last time, but we did put in a bid to government for £100,000 from the government's planning skills delivery fund, and we were successful in securing those monies, so that is obviously welcome, and we'll be using that money to appoint additional resource, again with the aim of bringing down the backlog further. So just to note that as well. John, if you want to talk through the numbers in a second, and I think just to say that obviously this work is ongoing. We've not completed the job. We know we need to bring down the applications further. We're working to improve the turnaround time for major and non-major applications. And at paragraph 5.5, we've set out a number of actions that we will take over the next 6 to 12 months to improve performance and customer service as well. And I think the one area just to kind of pull out really is on pre-application support. We are aiming to bring that back in. John will be working with the report for Cabinet later this year, and that will set the detail out. But the aim will be to provide that pre-application service and encourage good quality applications to come forward. So that's certainly something we want to bring to your attention this evening. But John, do you want to talk through the numbers and we can take the question?
Yes, certainly.
Actually, John, when you're talking through the numbers, will you talk through the 5.5 following actions as well?
Yep.
I'm not sure whether to take it. It doesn't seem worth taking it page by page. It's a bit laborious.
Yep.
But if you could pick those up, that'd be helpful.
Yep, that. In terms of the numbers that you see on page 13, the report was put together before the end of February, so figure 1 at the top, these are figures that are taken at the end of each month, so it doesn't have a February figure there, but I can tell you that that's come down now. The number of applications on hand has come down from 495 to 461. The applications awaiting validation has gone down from 69 to 64 at the end of February. In terms of figure 2, that's the replacement graph that I circulated. In effect, the one in the report, the dates at the bottom don't cover the whole of the period.
Oh.
So what you'll see is on the replacement one, we now show a further 4 months.
Yeah.
So you can see that in each of those 4 months, the orange line has been above the blue line, which is positive, so we're determining more applications each month than we're receiving.
It's also on a downward trend, isn't it? The blue line's on a downward trend as well.
Yes.
Altogether.
Yes. the blue line's out of our control, in the sense of that's what comes in. But as you correctly point out, that has been down in the last 6 months or so, compared with last year. So these, that shows where we're up to as of the end of last week, in effect.
Just stopping there. Has anybody got any comments on that? Anybody want to? That's fine. Carry on.
Just
sorry.
Yeah, so on figure one, you'll notice there was a little bullet of applications coming in, really, in December. So number one, we went from 79 to 104, and then down to 69.
Yes, the blue line's the number awaiting validation. So in effect, in December, we lost a month because of Christmas of the New Year period. So by the end of the month, the figure had gone up because we'd had effectively three working weeks rather than four.
Uh-huh.
But you'll see that since then we've managed to get it down to below where it was back in November and October.
Yep.
In terms of 5.5, the actions that we've got on there,
is it possible, like, to obviously you've stratified it by major and non-major applications? Is there further stratification possible to identify if there is areas within the application process which are performing better than others, beyond just major and non-major applications, tree applications, the different types of applications are top three?
Well, we use those definitions because that's what we have to provide the statistics from on a quarterly basis to government. That's what they publish. There are ways of breaking that down. So, for example, the major applications is 10 or more houses and floor space of a certain size. The minor ones, it could be 9 houses, or it could be a house extension.
Mm-hmm.
So within that, house extensions makes up the largest single element.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, or we can tell, how we perform on that. And in general, that's a higher percentage. But within that minor and other category, there are other types of applications that are usually more contentious, more likely to get called into committee, things like that. So we can break it down, but some of the categories are pretty small in number, so it wouldn't be hugely meaningful. I mean, I think the only one that would be meaningful would probably to give an indication of what the householder figure's like.
Yeah, we can do that.
We can do that, yeah.
That was the question. Would it be arduous to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Carry on then, John.
Okay. So for 5.5, the actions that we've got there for the next 6 to 12 months, the first A is recruitment of vacant posts. As many of you know, we've had vacant posts for a number of years. We found it very difficult to fill, and hence we've used agency support. Got approval now to go out to advert again. That will happen in the next week or two. Item B, improvements to customer service. One of the criticisms, concerns, I suppose, is in terms of what we've got feedback from the agents forum we had in the autumn, and also from other customers as well, is in terms of responding to queries, being able to not necessarily speak to somebody, but to be able to get answers to questions. So that's one of the things we're looking at, and there are particular elements within the service where that is more acute. For example, conservation is one of those, and it's partly a resource issue, but it's something that we need to be able to try and address and give customers' reasonable expectations are. C is something that Dean mentioned. It's the intention to introduce a chargeable pre-application service. So that's different to what we did up to about 3 years ago, where we did do a service but we didn't charge for it. So that involves a report to Cabinet and potentially also to Council, because it would be setting fees. The idea is to bring a report in the summer to be able to implement that sort of September, October kind of time. But obviously it needs to fit in with Cabinet and Council timescales. Item D, proactive use of planning performance agreements. A planning performance agreement is something where it's a legal agreement that you have with a developer to be able to deal with applications in a particular way. You do it from pre-application stage, and it involves agreeing to I say timescales, but not necessarily in an exact date, but in terms of how long certain elements of the process should take. There are advantages of doing the planning performance agreements in the sense that you can cover all of your costs by doing it that way. With planning application fees, some applications the fee doesn't anywhere near cover the cost. In others, you potentially get more, depending on what the floor space of the development is. But with planning performance agreements, you would be able to cover pre-application work, you'd be able to cover the cost of getting in expert consultants, what you might need for, say, if it was a wind farm or a solar farm or something like that, where it's a visual impact assessment that we can't do internally. So it's something that Cannock have done on two or three occasions in the last few years. We haven't done it to date in Stafford. There are not many proposals you would do it for. They'd have to be pretty large scale, but it's the potential to be able to do that and to be able to put that forward to developers.
Thank you, John. We put strategic sites, it lends itself to particular type of schemes, doesn't it? So you mentioned Cannock Chase, we've done it for the Rugeot Power Station redevelopment, for example. It is a complex, it's a big site, but it deals with, as you say, everything from pre-app through to outline and then reserve matters applications, of which there have been quite a number over the last couple of years. So then the idea is we use these on a select basis, but it certainly helps in terms of resources going forward. So thanks.
Item
E is in terms of the validation of planning applications, and we see there we're looking at a time to be able to validate applications of a maximum of 2 weeks. At the moment we have it's about 3 weeks for household applications and others house extensions. It has been, and certainly at the time this was written, it was nearly 7 weeks for others. That's come down now to just over 4 weeks. It's 4.2 or something like that. So it's come down quite significantly, but it's still not low enough. We need to get that 2 weeks or less.
Can I ask the difficult question, how are you going to do it? Because it's supposed to be 5 days.
We're going to do it by where entering into a contract with a supplier to provide 3 months short term work to be able to bring that figure down.
Right.
And then we think we can maintain it.
Okay.
Do you want to draw committee's attention though? We'll come back to here. If we process the incoming quicker, then that means we will deal with the backlog slower. There's more coming in quicker, but we're still solving things at the same speed. So do expect these graphs to look different. That's a sign of success. That's a sign that we are validating things quicker.
Well, it's a sign that we're actually getting back to where we should be,
exactly.
Which is the important thing.
That was one of the actions we agreed to the agents for and the, you know, list that we would make progress.
Totally want that, yeah.
But yeah, we've got the short term resource. As I said, we've got the £100,000 from government, and hopefully then we can stabilise and maintain going forward.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. You're leave there, John.
Item 7 is in terms of implementation of IT improvements within the current system. So the system we use at the moment is not a very new system. It's adequate, but it could be better. And there are a number of improvements that have been identified that we need IT to implement so we can do things quicker.
Is it linking up to Cannock now?
No.
So we're doing our own thing?
No, we don't. I don't want to link to Cannock, thank you.
That was one of the hold-ups before. And I'm looking at Michelle here because we had grief beyond belief because, first of all, the IT department wanted to hook into it all and then Cannock did.
No, the issue we have at the moment is the IT resources and the person that's doing this is also trying to rectify issues with Cannock's system and land charges and a few other things.
Okay.
It's one of those areas, Chair, that we've got the two separate systems. They both need some maintenance, but ultimately going forward, John, I think we would want to look at that opportunity to get a system that's fit for purpose across the two councils, but that's going to take a bit of time in terms of procurement.
Can I just say that I've been hearing this for the last 7 or 8 years, so it's something that perhaps we might have another look at again in however many, because this comes up regularly anyway, but it has been a thorn in your side, actually, trying to get the IT right, and it would make such a difference to the way that you can handle things more speedily. I'm well aware of it.
We can come back to
it. Yeah.
Item G is active case management. In effect, that's a continuation of what we've been doing successfully over the last 9 months or so in terms of continued caseload management, prioritisation. The other thing it mentions is reducing the number of applications determined by using extensions of time. So we were fairly heavily reliant on extensions of time, as a lot of other authorities are. That is significantly reduced over the last few months. Certainly in terms of house holder applications and house extensions, I've seen a number in the last week that have gone through in less than 40 days, which is, considering it's a 56-day target, 8 weeks, we're doing, I would say we're probably doing more than 80% without extensions. It's only really where there are issues with the application itself that needs amendment, and hence the agent, the architect, to amend the plans, and we have to reconsult that we're not able to do them in that time period.
That's good. That's very good news. And then your last one's peer review.
Yeah, finally, peer review to benchmark the performance and also to look at the way we do things. We last had a review
about 5 years ago.
I was going to say about 10 years ago, and it's something we recognise as benefit on, because obviously people who do these have done these for a number of authorities. You can pick up useful things from that.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for that. Any questions on that? I mean,
it looks like we're reinventing the wheel. I mean, I'm sure we had a board a few years ago consisting of the cabinet member, the chairman of planning, officers, etc., that set up a system to reduce the number of outstanding applications, and a lot of the things suggested there is what came through at that time. I think you were on it,
having
succeeded Doug Davis.
I did.
Who was the cabinet
member at that time.
Michelle remembers it well. I know we introduced a steam-driven T-card system, which made everything very visual.
We did.
But that seemed to have died a death.
I think we're moving on to we're in with new people in new times, apart from John, who's ploughing on.
But the backload again,
filled back up again. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like good news, that's the thing, and we will bring it back to each meeting. I think we've got it on, Jackie, haven't we? But I don't know if we... I don't want you to start doing papers for every meeting.
We can update the charts and...
I think that's all we'd need to see.
Yeah,
not necessarily at the next meeting, but again at 6 months.
Yeah, we can do
3 months.
So, Chair, I'll just respond to that. I mean, yes, it is cyclical, these things, you know, every few years. I think over the last few years we've seen quite a significant uptick in workload within all development management departments up and down the country, you know, with huge growth in household applications. So, you know, these things are cyclical, and things that were probably done 5-10 years ago we're redoing. So we're not suggesting we're reinventing the wheel, but we, you know, it's about getting on top of this, getting these numbers down, stabilising it. I think providing a good service ultimately is what we're here for. But it's a very valid comment.
Thank you.
I'm going to look finally at page 15 on the financial side. Has anybody got any points to make on that, or do you want any comments? I see there's been a planning fees increase, a reduction in budgeted income forecast as well. How does that affect the operation of our service, or do we just make sure that we receive the 100,000 and it all goes into the department?
Finance.
Is it one for finance?
Yeah, it's probably one we can
pick
up.
It might be worth.
But I think overall, in terms of this section of the report, you know, budgets are a key issue. We have had to incur spend on agency staff. We do have a reserve which we've been able to utilise. Obviously, that we rely on more applications coming in, so we can bolster the reserve. We've got the additional money, which is helping in the short term. I think going forward, obviously, with the planning fee increase, that was the first increase for how long, John? It's been quite a while, hasn't it?
6 years.
I mean, 6 years.
Yeah.
It's probably overdue, Chair, so that will help. But there is an expectation that we will determine those applications quicker, because the government obviously has made that quite clear now. You know, you've got that 16-week rather than 26-week through the planning guarantee. So.
Yeah.
I think we'll keep this under review. I mean, if there are particularly technical questions, obviously we can bring that back to
me. I was interested. And the 100,000 will all go to planning, will it?
Yes, that's specific.
It won't be siphoned off into any other.
No. It's ring fence for planning.
Excellent.
To deal with backlog.
Well, that covered the 3 months where you're getting the extra
validation, case officer support. Yeah.
Thank you.
So it will be useful.
And I think we'll want to look at validation again when we have the update, because obviously that needs to come down, the timelines need to come down there.
If you get we'll provide the update of those two graphs, so that will show the validation line as well as the on-hand figure.
That'd be fine.
Performance as well.
Yeah, we don't need more than that at this stage. That's great. Thank you, John, for that. We have got, what's the next item? Performance update is page 17, and we take this page by page. So page 17.
Just before we go through them all,
yep.
I think we have more things in the performance update than we need to cover in this committee. I think we've had this previously.
Yes, I know. I agree.
Yeah, I just there's a whole
yeah.
bunch of things that aren't for us. I think so. If we could.
Yeah, yeah. No, we'll definitely not pick those up.
Thank you.
I agree. We'll be here even longer. Page 17. Any questions there?
Just one, if I may.
Yeah.
We're talking about, or it indicates in fact, the renovation of the former co-op building, etc., in the Guildhall. Can I ask in actual fact, because it seems to be very, very hazy, to say the least, what's going to happen to the back of the building, and is that car park going to be open again, or is it not? Because parking, of course, in the middle of town.
You get one, sir?
Yep.
Michelle will answer that.
In the cabinet report. report in December for the acquisition of the Guildhall, and there is some explanation in there that basically says that the costs of bringing that car park back into use for a temporary period outstrip any benefit you would have of trying to do so, because basically it was mothballed, I think it was Christmas 2021, so there's been no maintenance on it. We don't know the state of the electrics, we don't know whether the lifts are actually safe, so there's lots and lots of things that you would have to spend money on to get it open. There isn't an issue in the wider town centre that, that kind of justifies that kind of expense over the short term.
And in the long term?
There's no plans to reopen it.
Okay. Any more on page 17? My inevitable one, what's happening to the local plan?
I'm looking forward to an announcement soon.
Oh,
that
really?
Before.
That would be nice.
Yes, I've said that before, I know. So as soon as I'm allowed to.
Okie doke. Turning over then to page 18. Anything on that page? No. Page 19. Has the on-site contractor for the station approach project been signed up now?
So they're confirmed. They've accepted
so
the commission.
So it's happening.
Yeah.
Excellent. Any more on that page?
Glad to see the sequencing with the other highway works being taken into consideration. I know some people found it difficult to get to the meeting this evening, so
yes,
considered as a...
Yeah, we are having those...
Coordinating and sequencing roadworks is apparently a novel concept, but I'm glad we're doing it.
Well said. Nothing else on that? Page 20.
Any update on what's happened in Leesbrook, John?
I refer the honourable gentleman to the answer I gave some moments ago, as soon as I can say something or not.
You'll let us know. So that this will all come back to the next meeting anyway.
Yeah.
Page 21, ticks and stars all over the place there. 22.
Just one question, if I may,
yep.
On that page. The six community projects have been earmarked for funding. Which community projects are there?
So I can provide the detail of the six, because I can remember three off the top of my head, but we can come back to you with those. So basically, we asked for community groups to apply into this fund. So it's basically the successful applicants from it, but we're talking about things like we've got a village hall in there, we've got a scout hut in there, it's those kinds of projects, but we can't provide a list.
Yeah.
Is that encompassing the whole of the 120,000 for those six projects?
But only 50,000 has been paid so far. So we've got six projects identified. It's not just a case of, can we have some money? Yes, you can. Here it is. There's a whole raft of kind of checks and balances that we have to do to make sure they're within the scope of the funding. So that's why some have been paid and some haven't. And if there's a dependency on planning permission, we have to make sure that that's been dealt with first. So that's just basically why it's staggered.
So it was 120,000 to start with,
yeah.
Of which 50 has been spent.
Yeah.
So we can provide a list.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Thanks for that, Peter. Page 23. Page 24. Anything on that? I will ask a question. Big tick on that one. Probably looking at Alex for this. Embed high quality design into planning policy to ensure that Stafford's an attractive place, da di da di da. At what stage do we have to meet the new government design codes? Are we obliged to work to those standards now?
Yeah, so the adopted plan has got a policy on design.
Yeah.
And since then, there have been NVPF updates, and you obviously take into account through the internal management process on design. design and then the National Modern Design Code and the associated guide. And so, and the final bit of the jigsaw is that the Levelling Up and Regeneration Act now makes it mandatory for local authorities to press ahead with design codes, and so that's what we're looking to do as part of a coordinated programme with the new local plans. So that's what we're up to. But there is some there've been some pilots that have been done in terms of design coding, and so we've now got a better sense of what's required and the resources associated with it. So we're continuing to progress as is represented here.
And we'll need to budget for it because it's a requirement. So, and the government will give us the money to do it.
There are always opportunities to bid for money.
Or maybe not. Okay, thank you for that. And page 25. John's really covered all that, haven't you, John? 26, same thing. Sorry.
Got a question on 26. Just
yep.
A couple of things. One, it's good to see that it's gone up to 55%, the turnaround time for land charges.
Yeah.
But the other question is, it's not been resolved yet, then, the issues with the county council and their systems. I wonder what the problem is there.
So the first thing to note is quarter three is October, November, December. Is that right? Yeah, October, November, December. So we are looking back to right up to before Christmas. So this is a moving feast. So we're always looking a little bit far behind. So basically, there was an issue with how the county council systems were interfacing with the information that we were sending to them. It's a really, really delicate system, the land charges system. Whilst the process itself is relatively straightforward, we have a raft of questions and different people in different organisations answer them. It doesn't take very much to wobble the system because it's very, very, it's very finely balanced in terms of staff. So we have 1.7 members of staff in land charges here. So when one goes on holiday, we're thinly spread. It's exactly the same at the county council. They have an incredibly small team. So an IT issue that might only last 3 or 4 weeks could impact on the pipeline of work for a number of quarters, which is basically what you've seen here. As far as I'm aware, there isn't a problem at the moment, but it would only take a couple of people to go off sick, and you'd notice it looks quite sharp. What we haven't had is lots of complaints from people saying, well, my house sale hasn't gone through because you've not done my search. So the impact on the customer seems to be minimal at the moment. We just keep an eye on it and monitor it. And we have a kind of early warning flagging system and also conversations with Canuck colleagues. Is this just a Stafford thing or is this a countywide thing? Do we need to sort of shout up for some help? So fingers crossed it's sorted. But just to say, at certain times of the year, we will notice the numbers go up and down because it's also dependent on how active the housing market is. So when it's quiet for house viewings, land charges is quiet. When the sun comes out and people want to go and look at houses, the workload goes up. So you'll get used to these kind of peaks and troughs.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we've got a target of 100% within 10 working days. So how feasible is it that we'll get back there after 12 months of being below that target?
If there's no sickness absence or vacancies within the staffing team, the Staffordshire County Council team, and all the IT plays ball, yes, we'll get there. We were there consistently pre-COVID, so yeah, it's doable.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, Michelle. Everything covered in that. We now move on to the final item, which is the work programme. We've added one or two things to it tonight.
Chair?
Yeah.
I know that obviously we're missing out page 27. I think I've just heard Councillor Cross mention the same thing.
Oh.
But I do feel that I need to say that as far as operations goes and the number of residents who think the town centres are clean and tidy, 96%. I'd like to see which 96% of residents thought that the town centre looks clean and tidy, because if you go around the borough, I think you find that there's so much litter everywhere. Clean and tidy is not the words that I'm hearing, and I just wanted to make that statement.
Thanks for that, Marnie. Yes, there's some pockets that are less attractive than others, that's for sure. In the main, I think it does look nice, particularly as the spring and summer comes and the flowers are out and so on.
I'll take you through some of the other places.
I live here too. So we move to the future items. We've got the general ones, business planning report, performance update and work programme. We've added one or two, but they're for the 6 months. Are there any particular ones that members would like to be brought forward to the next meeting? It's a matter of timing, isn't it,
yep.
Dean? It's what we could bring forward next time. We'll presumably the task and finish will have an interim report at that stage. Of the items we talked about today, are there any that we could bring to, that the officers could manage to produce by the May meeting, I suppose, is the question.
Well, Chair, we'll obviously wait to see what the dates of the meetings are. I think we've confirmed those yet, haven't we? So we obviously will need to pull work programme together for the next municipal year. Obviously, I've noted a number of areas you want to come back to around tourism, development management. There obviously will be other areas for you to consider. I'm not sure we need to do that this evening,
okay.
But we certainly, it'd be helpful if members of the committee could go away and have a think about areas that they want to add, and they want to contact us. In the meantime, we can have a look at that. But the idea would be to agree that work programme. I think local plan, Meesbrook, obviously we need to come back to that at the appropriate point. Design codes, I'm sure they'll want to come back to the town centre at some stage.
Well, that's the task and finish doing that.
Yeah. So,
and a UKSPF, I think we might
yeah.
ask to put on the next.
We haven't looked at that this year, so
because that would be a special one.
I also suggest that we've got more than one town centre.
Yeah.
Might be
yeah.
worthwhile looking at Stone and Eccleshall town centres and Tier 4 as well.
They're saying more about the Eccleshall and all those things.
Yeah. So. There's more to our economy than just.
Yeah, I'm just conscious that we've got a task and finish specifically on Stafford at the moment, which we'll need to report.
So,
whenever.
Chair, if we can bring a report to the first meeting of the municipal year, sort of work programme, and have that on the table for the next meeting.
Good idea. That's
but if you've got any ideas in the meantime, obviously.
Would you send them through? Any suggestions? Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for your attendance. I'm now going to declare the meeting closed. Thank you to all the officers for sitting through the evening. And I hope